involved with it. There would probably need to be women working on this issue on a frequent basis within the Division of Aid to create some sort of a self-sustaining and ongoing program. Both you, Dr. Hope, and Dr. Fauci have on a couple of occasions stated that if a drug company came up with a good drug and they called you, you could get it into trials within a couple of weeks. And I don't know whether or not that's actually true, that can be done within a few weeks, period, but we're told that to even get a conference, the first time that the NIAID will start looking at women with HIV could take 6 to 7 months. And then to start looking at some of these other issues, it will take even longer, and to hire people will take even more time. And within that amount of time, a large number of women with HIV will die. And that is really the bottom line, is how quickly you can get these things done. When we start raising issues around women with HIV, immediately the issues of budget and staffing are brought up. And while I'm quite aware that you do not have enough people to fill the staff position, somehow that has to be worked around. You said that you're just now getting into a really hard push to get those people into the position. But I don't, even with aerosolized contaminating, getting that drug into testing was a year of delay, and during that time period, 16,000 people died of DCP because of the lack of enough persons. So obviously this is an ongoing problem that has to be dealt with in some sort of a way so that it ceases to be a problem, because every time it comes up, large numbers of people die because of something you don't do. And you have so many different priorities and so many things you're trying to do that it seems that the same issues always are the ones that get pushed to the front and that can't continue in terms of healing. It's your responsibility, epidemic, to save people's lives. I know that you're trying to change right around the focus on opportunistic infection. This took a serious pressure from ACT UP and the congressional investigation to about this change. Right now, what you have here is ACT UP, two ACT UPs, telling you this, that we need to see these things done and done quickly, and national investigation.
Problems around to do it all the time.
But I refuse to believe that it has to be as difficult as it is made out to be to get some of these things done. If the willpower to do it were there, it could get done, because I've seen things in the system get done when the willpower is there. So I know if you want to.
Okay, so we'll tell you what we think as a bottom line we want to see happen. And I would second what Dawn said. Things that are happening could be happening for both men and women. The fact that they're only happening for men is your responsibility. So, first, we think that you should take responsibility right now to gather the information that's already out there about women. That includes information about OIs, disease progression, survival rates, gynecological presentations, protocols in use for treatment that people are using online. And as I said, that we should be gathered together immediately and disseminated across the country, because there are people who do not have any access to this information. And we're not just talking about clinical research, because given the low priority placed on women in clinical research, most of this information is known by women who are working with women with AIDS, and not by clinical researchers doing trials. So we would want to see you fund and organize a conference, not within 6 months, but within 6 weeks, that is by mid-September. And to pay for women to get there, because if you know anything about women who are working in these settings, they're not being paid well enough to go, and a lot of their settings don't have any money, they're community settings. And it has to be frontline workers, it has to be people who are working with women every day and who see them. And it's not only to bring together information from research trials, but it's to focus on working sessions where women across the country who on a day-to-day basis are already working with women in AIDS, and know what OIs they're presenting, and know what is working or not working, or at least have a good guess at it, have a chance to share their information and put that together so that it becomes information. And we want to see all of that information put together and put out, and we'd like to see it put out in the press, in medical journals, and across the medical system. So that's the first thing that we would like to see. Second, in terms of the research that is funded through NIAID and the Division of AIDS and NIH, for that matter, we want assurance that in every aspect of your research program, the reality and existence of women with AIDS and the differences between women and men will be acknowledged. For us, it includes, at a minimum, the following. First, the development of research protocols which always include women, including females in animal studies. You know, there was once a book in the 60s called Even the Rat Was White. It was male, too. And every level of study that occurs here and every type of study has to include women. In order to make that a reality, given the circumstances that we've talked about why women are not in research protocols right now and they don't accrue very quickly, in order to make that happen, just as other kinds of criteria for assessing the quality of a grant application exist, we think that there have to be criteria for what constitutes an acceptable research proposal from the point of view of women. And we think that these criteria, if they include the provision of funding, that funding should either be provided along with the grant or by the institution that's applying for the grant. And they include, first, outreach workers as part of the research staff, not overloading a social worker, not assuming that somebody in another part of a hospital is going to let some client know that there's a research study going on, but an active outreach person with every research grant who has that job and that job only. Second, primary health care has to be provided, including GYN services, during and after research in which women are included. And if those women have children, then it has to be for their kids too. And that, again, is whether this is a clinical drug trial or whether it's an epidemiological study. Women have to be getting something out of their participation in these trials that's going to help them live longer, whether or not the treatment does or not. And we know that primary health care will do that. That there has to be priority given in the creation of and funding of research sites in which women exist. And we know where those research sites are. They're in places like Puerto Rico and Newark and New York. That we have to give priority to trial designs that deal with women's realities instead of using women's realities to exclude them. This makes sense scientifically. For instance, if many of the women who are seropositive are IVDUs and therefore have elevated liver levels, then instead of using that as a criteria to exclude them, we should start creating trials that take that into account. And as an aside to that, if the drugs we're developing all screw up your liver function, then maybe that's not the kind of drugs we should be developing. That those research protocols and proposals have to provide a way of giving women childcare, transportation costs, the cost of any diagnostic tests that they may need. If they require a primary care physician, then part of that funding should be for primary care physicians. The criteria for inclusion in a drug trial cannot be that a woman be in a drug treatment program for a clinical trial. For an opportunistic infection drug or for an antiviral, for instance, cannot be that a woman be in a drug treatment program unless the institution provides a drug treatment program. And if the institution doesn't provide a drug treatment program, then they've got to figure out a way to do research with women who are not in drug treatment programs. That's unacceptable. It's unacceptable for researchers to require women to use any form of birth control, and especially a specific form of birth control. And that research design has to take into account all of those possibilities. And there's a way to do that. You do not have to coerce women in order to fit them into your trial. Your trial should fit their lives. It is unethical to have protocols in which the effects of some treatment on the fetus are tested without also assessing the effects of a treatment on a woman, and which guarantee the woman access to that treatment after the child is born. That is unethical, and it's got to be eliminated. Protocols for women have to be designed that enable women who become pregnant during the trials to make a choice as to whether they want to stay in, whether they want to go off and get back on, either if they've decided to terminate the pregnancy or bring the pregnancy to term, or if they decide to take the drug only during a specific period of their pregnancy. For instance, there may be counterindications to taking the drug during the first trimester or during the third trimester. the allowance of a flexible research design that would incorporate that is not only benefits women, it's good science. And it has to happen. And all of this would be at the woman's choice by giving her information and by making those things possible. And that leads to the fact that informed consent forms have to be designed for women specifically because there are specific issues that concern women. And women have to know what they're getting and not getting in those drug trials or treatment trials. Any and all research information that's collected has to find a way to include women who are having sex with women as a specific identifiable group. This is a priority in epidemiological research about which there is nothing known. But it also means that you cannot call a study a heterosexual transmission study when you haven't figured out whether the women are really heterosexual or not, and you take that for granted. That's just a lie and bad science. It has to be priority in research of opportunistic infections for women and the development of treatment protocols. These are things that we want to have starting happening now. But we would also want to form a women's committee by the next ACTG meetings in November. In fact, if you have a conference within 6 weeks, you will have a resource pool of people who are exactly the people you would want on an ACTG or NIAID women's committee. People who've been working with women and know what's going on and know what their lives are like. From our point of view, that committee has to be equal in power to every other committee. It cannot be marginalized. It has to have voting power on an executive committee. It has to have the power to review and have the power to reject all proposals for research from the point of view of how they are responding to women's needs. And that should be from the pre-proposal form all the way up to the completed proposal form, so that no one has an excuse that they work too long already. That committee should have the ability to develop protocols to evaluate the safety, efficacy, dosage for treatments for HIV progression and opportunistic infections as they uniquely affect women. And from our point of view, the criteria for being on this committee are that, first of all, it's got to have women, people with AIDS on it, women with AIDS, women with HIV, with and without kids, IV drug using women, lesbians with AIDS on it, so that you will know the reality of who the women are who have AIDS in this country or who are seropositive, and they know what their lives are like. It's got to have patient advocates on it. It's got to have women who work with women in clinics on the front lines and know what they're seeing day to day and how that's changing. It's got to have women who run hotlines and know what the questions are that people ask so we can figure out what we need to tell people. And community-based programs that have women there, including women's health centers and community-based drug programs that are seeing a lot of women. And finally, it's got to have doctors, nurses, and researchers, but only those who have focused on women as women. That includes GYNs, internists, and anybody else, but it's not people who have focused on women as fetus carriers. And those are the demands that we think from our understanding of what's going on and what's not going on need to be met as a basic minimum at this point in order that we don't wait a year and have an enormous number of deaths.
Okay. That's a lot of information here. Yes.
We'll be glad to forward these to you in writing.
Yeah. So that you'll have them.
I also wanted to make sure that I made this available to you. This was produced by the New Jersey Women and AIDS Network. Have you seen it? This should be made available to every physician in this country.
Okay. well, I appreciate your presentations. Unfortunately, I'll stretch it longer than I have another meeting at 5:30. That can be 15 minutes, 10 minutes late, but not much more than that. So let me just... Obviously, I can't respond to each and every individual thing that you brought up because that would take probably a couple of hours of back and forth discussion. Let me just make some general points about what you've said specifically and about your approach towards me and the Institute and the division, and maybe that'll serve as a basis for future interactions, if in fact there are future interactions. That's one of the points that I'm going to make. That is, I think, as is always the case, as has been the case in interactions with people who are activists, are very dedicated, very concerned, are knowledgeable, but have the disadvantage of not being in a particular field, even though you say women know women better than anybody else knows women. That's true, but in the scientific, medical, physical problems, there may be an area where physicians who may not be women know more about it, or the backlog of experience, even though the woman's appreciation has to be taken into account. In other words, I don't think, and I agree with you, that one shouldn't make statements or policies regarding women unless you have both a solid scientific base, wherever that comes from a man or a woman, as well as the real input from women, be they straight women or lesbian women or what have you. So, however, as has been the case before, when you put a menu of 10 things, I think several of the things that are said are completely incorrect. And if I were to close my mind to them immediately, I wouldn't have heard a couple of what I think are really some good points that you made that would probably be productive. You've got to be able to accept that we point out to you some of the things that are not incorrect that you're stupid, but incorrect that I think you're maybe looking at it from the wrong perspective, so that we can get to the things that are really important, and that I think that you, the points that you made that were good points. And again, I'd like to have the time sometime to be able to go over some of the statements that were made that I think just factually I could understand how you came to that conclusion, but may not really be scientifically correct, although some of them really are quite correct. The other point I want to make generally is that you have brought up some issues that relate to biomedical research and the mission of NIH, and specifically NIAID, but you've also brought up some issues that are quite valid, but that are much more sociological healthcare delivery issues that are, and this isn't passing the buck, it's just the reality, it's beyond the purview of what we can do. Certain things that are intrinsically associated with the real failings and shortcomings in healthcare delivery among many segments, particularly IV drug users, particularly minority, and particularly that large segment of women that happen to fall into those categories. And there are many things that you say, well, we demand you do this and we demand you do that, that even if we wanted to do it, which we probably would because what you're saying is correct, we couldn't. So I think what you need to do is find out...
For example?
Well, about healthcare delivery problems. See, we can't get, just on the basis of what our mission and our resources is, solve the problems of the inequities and the real obstacles and barriers to a proper healthcare delivery.
You can't link money to places that provide
healthcare? But within your research trials, you can.
Well, yeah, in specific research trials to take into account things like what do you do with the child as you go and get your therapy, those we can. But we can't solve the healthcare delivery problems of an area or a region or those associated with a particular population, because you're talking about of a magnitude that totally transcends what our research budget is. I mean, that's a real problem.
But what we're asking you
to
do...
I'm sorry. Let me just tell you what the general things. Otherwise, because if we get caught on this point, we're not going to get caught on the others. Let me just tell you what I perceive, and if we have time, we'll don't get too angry, because then you won't hear the other things I'll say.
Go ahead. Okay.
Rest assured, we've been angry for long enough.
Okay. Let me tell you, actually, your just go ahead will get me to my fourth point, but let me take the third point. There are a lot of issues that are biomedical research issues. For example, what I think are the very good points about gynecologic infections and the real need to be able to appreciate different manifestations and what one can do about them. Now, unfortunately, that cross-cuts... areas of our responsibility and others' responsibility. But that doesn't mean because it doesn't fall into one that we could just let it fall through the cracks. For example, the natural history and the epidemiology of things that might be more appreciated. Like you said, you don't know how many HIV-infected women there are. Well, you know, that would require screening the whole population because a lot of the so-called infected women that are silent and don't know they're infected until they get a severe gynecological infection, and because nobody thought of the fact that they might be HIV positive, they may be going for a long period of time without appropriate care. That has much more to do with the whole policies of screening and finding out what populations are infected than it does the biomedical research mandate of the NIH. So although that is an excellent point, it's something that perhaps we can help by discussing it at levels that are responsible for it trickling down to whoever is supposed to be doing it, than it is for us to be arguing with you whether we should be doing it or not, because it is very unlikely that we would have any avenue to answer that question, even though I think it's a very valid question. Other valid questions, like the assumption that lesbians don't transmit it one to another. I'm not talking about IV sharing, but I'm talking about sexually transmitting. There are ways and probably data in databases that might already answer that. For example, given the known similarity of transmissibility between hepatitis and HIV, one could look at what the relative level of hepatitis in non-IV drug using lesbian women are that might give you a handle, because if it in fact is much higher, that would suggest, since they're transmitted the same way. And I think if that data isn't available, it can be made available by going back over databases and finding out, even on a pilot study that looks at a hepatitis study, and find out how many of these women are lesbians. And that's where you need the help of the lesbian community to help people realize that it's important to come forth and say, yes, we are, and maybe they have a 5 times higher rate of hepatitis B, because there's no reason to believe that it's not going to be transmitted exactly the same way. So those are some, I think, the good points that you made, but there are other ways to get to the answer, not why aren't you doing that. Now let me just, and then maybe we can leave some points for back and forth discussion. The fourth thing has to do with the reasons why you said you were here, why you're angry with me, and why you're saying, go on, go on. Let me tell you something about me, that how people get to me. ACT UP New York, including Durant, but predominantly men ACT UP New York, gay ACT UP New York, got me to have very serious, in-depth, productive interactions with them, not because they demonstrated, not because they did name calling, because they did that for a long time before I met them, but because they demonstrated to me that they were knowledgeable, were willing to admit when they were in fact wrong, and had something to offer that was productive. That's why I initially met with them, and the initial meetings got better and better and better. Demonstrations don't get me. So when you come in and threaten, I can guarantee you 100%, if you threaten, you will get nothing. Zero. If you demonstrate with nothing to back it up, you will get nothing from me. If you come in and you give me a list of 10 things, and I see that 4 of them are grossly incorrect, I will not laugh at you or scorn you for being incorrect. I will try to tell you why I think you're incorrect, and I'll work with you on the other 6 issues in which you are quite correct. But to come in here and say the only way you were going to get to you, we're here because we demonstrated a threat. You're here because you wrote a letter and you're ACT UP. And my previous experience with ACT UP New York has been that it has been very productive interaction. That is the only reason why you're here. If you had marched in front of here with banners and started doing that, you wouldn't have gotten near me. So if you understand that, our future relationships will be productive.
Well, the only reason that we got anywhere near you to begin with was those marches outside.
That's incorrect.
Well, we can sit here and argue about this for a long time.
Now, wait, the marches outside happened 1.5 to 2 years after I began discussions with ACT UP. Go on, correct your friend.
That was when you were at the FDA. Mm-hmm. When we did stuff at the FDA.
At the FDA, that was totally irrelevant to me. I didn't care what you did at the FDA. The first time we had...
Do you want to dialogue with us about women and AIDS?
Well, no, because I want to tell you what the ground rules of how we interact. And if the ground rules aren't the right ground rules, we're never going to talk about women with AIDS. That's something you have to understand, because that transcends everything we're talking about. We won't talk about women with anything unless you understand that.
Well, let me talk about how coercive you are being.
Right.
Okay. It is unethical and irresponsible for the head of a government agency that is responsible for the entire population to tell any specific group of women that you are not going to do anything about women and AIDS unless we act nice.
No, I'm not telling you
that. That's what. Excuse me. That's what
you
just said.
I won't talk to you about women with AIDS.
You know what? If you never talk to us again and you do something about women with AIDS, we will leave here thrilled.
Good. Then you.
We actually are not thrilled to be, you know, here talking. We wanted to come to tell you
that
stuff.
And we certainly feel we need to do more, and will do more. So don't get confused, because there's too much misquoting crap in all of this. I never said that I won't do anything with women with AIDS unless you're nice. I said I will not deal with you unless we do it in a productive way.
Can I say something?
Wait, let Lauren talk.
I was just going to say, I kind of just resented your tone where you want us to demonstrate something, like we're trained pets or something.
No.
Or we get zero, but
no.
we're losing the real issue here.
I'm not saying that. I want you to demonstrate, which part of what you already did impress me enough to want to continue it. And that's why I said there are four issues, certain of the things that I think are important to pursue, and I'd be delighted to pursue it with you. What I'm trying to say is that the idea that the only reason we're here is we demonstrate and go ahead, that kind of nonsense. See, that doesn't shake with me. And if you want to deal with me, you're going to have to learn how it is to deal with me the way I would like to learn about what the best way to deal with you is. And in my experience with ACT UP and other organizations is not that you have to be good or nice. Goodness, we fight and argue with ACT UP New York all the time. But the one thing we do understand is that we're both going for the same goal, and we both know that there are good points that both sides make. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about being nice, good people, and if you just be quiet and be nice, I'll listen to you. Absolutely not. I'm saying you've got to show me that you're not in it for just the whole idea of demonstrating, but you actually have seriously looked into this, and you have some important points you want to make with me. And I've already seen that you have some that are quite good. But you got to cut the attitude that we're going to get to you because we're going to, you know, march around your building. You can march around all you want, and it's not going to make any difference. That's the point I'm trying to make. Okay.
And I think the point that I'm trying to make is that there's a supposition on your part that having dealt with certain people in ACT UP New York specifically, which certainly doesn't represent ACT UPs around the country, and having dealt with a specific group of people according to some agreement you have with them, that we come with the same agreement, and frankly, you haven't proved anything to us. So that the basis of trust that you claim was built up over time with those people has not been built up with this particular group of women. And therefore, at the same time that you are telling us what you expect of us, I'm telling you that I have no reason to trust you in terms of women's lives. And you have to understand that also.
I have no reason to mistrust you. When earlier on you had promised that the taping of the session would be handled a certain way, and you were inappropriate 20 minutes into your first talk. So if anything, within 20 minutes of the presentation, you formed the basis for mistrust on our part with you. You specifically used an identifier as to who you were talking to. So quite frankly, if you were talking about trust, you didn't go a long way early on to build it up.
Could I just interject
something?
I really had hoped that we had all sort of on a general level gotten beyond that, and that...
No, we hadn't, Durance. We had went in the discussions that we've had with ACT UP New York on all those issues, but we haven't when one starts off by declaring why you're here, which I found to be incorrect. I mean, again, I don't want to dwell too much on it, because I think there are some good things that can come out of interacting. I just want to make sure we understand that you don't walk out of here thinking that the reason you're here is because you're demonstrating or you're acting tough and talking tough. The reason I'm going to continue to listen to you is because you've given some important points that I want to pursue. I don't care if you hate me, if you love me, if you demonstrate, or if you don't demonstrate. What we can both do together for women with HIV infection is what I am interested in, whether you trust me or not.
Would you like to address that issue? Can you talk about that?
It's going to take an awful long time.
Can you talk about one thing?
Yes.
Before we leave?
Yeah, I think the whole idea, whether or not, first of all, the whole idea about opportunistic infections being an issue that we don't want to confuse with the difference between men and women in certain types of clinical trials. Now, when you, whatever conference that you were talking about where I said there wasn't any physiological difference, you have to be careful because there could be misinterpretation. Of course, there are a lot of differences, and some of them may impact on some of the secondary manifestations of the disease. There may or may not be. Certainly, from an incredible amount of experience we have with antiviral drugs and even an enormously more experience with antibacterial drugs, there doesn't seem to be any difference in the way women respond to penicillin for pneumococcal pneumonia than men, whether they respond to gentamicin for pseudomonas than men. So we know that there are certain things that it would probably be resources not well spent to have a special study for women with an antiviral in this regard versus men. Now, that doesn't mean you've got to completely throw away potential difference, because the point you made that if, in fact, women are getting fulminant pelvic of tubal ovarial abscesses and things like that and are presenting with HIV in that regard, it's going to be very important in this, first of all, certainly with regard to prophylactic therapy ultimately in the future for HIV-infected individuals. So right there, there is a difference. Now, what I'm saying to myself is, given the studies as they already exist, can that information be gotten without having a separate study? Because if it can, then let's take a look at how we can modify the data collection on those studies to be able to get that information. If it turns out that that's impossible for one reason or other, then you sit back and say, well, maybe we've got to do some sort of pilot study to find out what the extent and reality of that difference is, because, well, I'm not sure it's true, but it's perfectly reasonable that it would be true, and then what can we do about it? So that's one of the points that I think needs to be pursued.
What about the point of the data collection, the stuff that we already have that we could be using?
In other words, we have, obviously, we have 8% women, is probably less, because you're right about the women and the baby. That's a very good point. And in fact, that was pointed out to me by Iris, I guess, at that meeting. And we went back and looked, and you're right. So there are less women than we have in that figure that goes out. But given the number of women that are in clinical trials, and hopefully the more that will be going in, you may be able to collect that data right from the protocol, even though the protocol isn't derived as a women-specific protocol versus a men-specific protocol. Even though it's a general protocol, you may be able to go into the data bank and pull that out and get the answer, or at least get an inkling that, wait a minute, there really is a difference here. Let's go design a trial specifically for looking at. But if you have a reasonable amount of data, and it doesn't even look like there's any difference at all, then given the fact that you have to prioritize resources, it probably wouldn't make much sense to look at that particular question. Then you go to the next question that we're talking about. That's what I mean about data that's already being presented.
But I have to say that when you say data already being presented, you presume that the people, that without any kind of mandate from your office, okay, that the people who have been collecting data have been collecting the relevant data.
Well,
okay, and the fact is that there may be women in those trials who are showing PID or GYN symptoms, who no one is writing it down because what they're looking for is a male end marker.
I hear you. That's a possibility.
So we can't. All I want to say about that is we can't conclude
by
going back to that data that if there's no differences between the men and women, that we shouldn't pursue it.
When I say go back to the data, let me explain what I mean. I don't mean go back and say if there's no mention of PID, then it is correct. But if part of the protocol, they say physical examination, and you look in this particular protocol, included is a pelvic exam, then you say, okay, then we have the data. We've gone past that one. If it says included, if there's no pelvic exam included, then you say, now wait a minute, I can't be sure it isn't happening.
Right. However, I mean, I know anecdotally of women who, for instance, have not been put into certain trials because the people running them do not do pelvic exams.
See, that again gets into a couple of things you brought up. That gets into the healthcare delivery problem. It also gets into mandate of the protocol that, in fact, you're right. If there are centers in which they just don't do protocols and there are women in those, they don't do pelvics and there are women in those protocols, then I think the information that doesn't occur is important information for us, and that is something that was positive by this kind of interaction, because we'll go back and look and find out. If they're not, then A, they should, and if they don't, then that may be one of the mandates that go along with the protocol, that if you don't do that, then you're not going to get funded for the protocol, because we're not going to get the information.
As far as I know, none of the protocols collect that type of information, except for, I think, maybe 076, and they collect for PrEP, so they choose how they want to do for
I want to ask you about 076 also, which is, if there's going to be like so much resources devoted to this trial, and I think enrolling like maybe 700 women or something to account for the third that will deliver a baby that is not affected or something, is there any way that we could please like go back and incorporate into that some collection of blood work and information on how ADT affects pregnant women? Because as it was explained to me, 076 at the pediatric meeting a couple of weeks ago, that's not the plan. The data they want to collect is just to see how long they can give AZT to this woman so that she doesn't have toxic effects, so they can then assess how it does in the fetus. And then, you know...
Sure. No, that's very reasonable. I don't know whether we don't have that. If we don't, then we need to
find that question. before counsel, clinical.
In other words, treating the woman as if she was involved in this trial.
The point that you made, let me just, again, I'm totally out of time now, but the point that you made about the things that you want, you're absolutely correct, that it is totally crazy to assess the effect of a treatment on a fetus and have absolutely no regard at all for what the effect is on the woman. I mean, we don't have any argument on that. And if the approach now, the protocol, is in fact inadvertently doing that, then it needs to be readdressed.
We also follow that up
in most protocols that have pregnant women in them.
And we follow that up so that after the woman does give birth, she isn't just cut off from the drugs and from all care. I mean, if you follow through with the child, you also have to follow through on the woman.
It's a good point. You're absolutely correct. No argument with that. No argument with that.
Well, I hope we see something that addresses that.
The protocol chairs and the medical officer involved in that committee to give you more input than I have, but we will go back and look at that.
Maybe I can just say two of these things that, in addition to some of the things that you've mentioned, that are important to us. One is that there is information out there, and it's not just in research protocols, and that's why we want this conference of women who are working, people who are working on the line with women. You know, how we found this stuff out is that we talked to those women. Okay, and if you don't know it, and it's not in research literature, then some way you've got to find out a way to access that, and there's an easy way to access that. All that you have to do is get together the people that are actually working with women and ask them what they're seeing, and let them talk to one another so that they can say, oh yeah, I'm finding that and you're finding this. You know, it's the same thing as at the beginning of this disease, finding a pattern among a specific group of men. Except we're not doing that, and we wait 6 months for a conference that's going to be all the people who are up here, not the people who are down here, not the people who are seeing these women every single day. So I want that seriously dealt with, because I think that there's no need for us to wait, and I think that once that information is gotten, which can be done in a working session really easily by someone who knows how to facilitate information sharing, there are people who do that, and create summaries of that it should be put out right away. And if you don't want to bet your life on it, you can do what every scientist I know does. You can say, may. saying that this may be true at least alerts
true.
People no. to saving their lives. Not putting it out there doesn't.
Do we have time to say, is it, well, it's the one that I know.
I think logistically we can do it.
They have to have a comprehensive.
We could have
of people who are working on the lines with women.
Then maybe you would know better things to address in your conference 6 months from now, because you could pick up on things that might be, interesting or important.
Well, how about instead of it being a conference, sort of have a planning meeting,
a working group,
ad hoc working group meeting before then, to sort of identify some of the issues and the people who should be involved then.
Well, when I think of a conference, I don't think of people listening to papers.
No, I'm not talking about that.
Okay. So in a way, I'm thinking of a working group, but I'm not thinking of it being incredibly small. I would like to see people access to a working with women.
Yeah, I don't know how large, but what I was thinking is sort of an agenda formulating pre-meeting to sort of make sure that when the meeting does come, we got the right people there, we have the right agenda, and we're asking the right questions, rather than go to the meeting 6 months later and then find out, oh yeah, all these things came by, we'll have another meeting a year from now with those issues. Why don't we do that? I'm sorry I have to go, but I think we should get together again, and if you could get me those items, and you could scratch out some of those terribly argumentative things. What is your name?
Heidi.
If you just, it'll be better, really. You could hate me, that's all right, but it'll be better if we do it in a way that's...
I have no interest in hating you, I just want you to do your job, that's all.
Okay, I'm doing my job. I just want you, because you sound like you got some good points to be helpful in that topic. Because it'll do much better with me. I'm doing my job better than you could possibly imagine.
Well, not good enough yet.